You are listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church, located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to westhill.net/donate.
Good morning. We wish to acknowledge that we are on the traditional territory of the Mississaugas of the New Credit First Nations lands, which lands were previously occupied by the Seneca and Huron-Wendat First Nations. My name is Marcia Pine, and I'm here today to welcome you to our first gathering of 2018. Our theme today is commitment, and this first week of January can be our opportunity or a challenge to make commitments, perhaps thought of sometimes as New Year's resolutions. You may be interested to know that approximately 40% of us will make New Year's resolutions, but that only a small group will actually be successful at keeping them. Now, don't worry, I'm not asking for a show of hands here as to how you're doing so far, but I have done the research for you. And according to Dr. Google, there are a variety of sites out there that can help you access and achieve success. These range from 50 New Year's resolutions and how to achieve them. Personally, I thought 50 was a little over the top. And I don't even want to imagine the pie graphs necessary to chart success, especially when giving up pie was probably one of the 50 resolutions. On another site, Tony Robbins, the life coach, suggests that the importance of having both clarity of purpose and a plan will likely lead to more success. Another theory, it is if you have support from others, a team, a congregation, you're more likely to be successful. So this brings us back to all of us here at West Hill and to our words of commitment. I think of these words as our weekly resolutions, our life purpose and plan, our commitment to how we will live our lives on a daily basis with the support of those in our lives. These are the resolutions I know we can keep.
Grounded, guided, growing. A time for centering. From Scott Kearns.
I dropped the slide into Dropbox. And it fell out the bottom somewhere. I don't know where it happened. And something's going wrong with Dropbox from home to here. And it wasn't before. So, but the ironic thing and the reason I mentioned that is because my picture, which is pretend you're seeing this lovely wooden table, planks of wood, with some candles on the end of it, many, many candles, and then the year 2018. Isn't that beautiful? It's a beautiful slide, isn't it? Yes. And the idea was to bring that into the idea of us at the beginning of this year being grounded on the earth, and I love the wood look was grounded, that we are grounded in life itself, and we have no idea 2018 what's coming. But we do know that we're going into it with our eyes open and our ears open and attending. Oh, that's not it, but thank you, Peter. How did you find that? Could you please put some candles in there? Would you indulge me in giving an applause? Peter at the back is amazing. Isn't that amazing? And so they're grounded, and then they're guided, and the candles, and the candles were the guided by love, is that we keep asking, and we're singing today, keep asking, what would love do now? What would justice call me to do? What would compassion pull out of me in this situation? And the many candles were to say that it takes all of our wisdom together to learn how to do that better. I fell down yesterday, nice and, this is getting better. the many candles. I can't do it without you. You can't do it as well without the rest of us. I think it's already been mentioned this morning. So the growing in wisdom together is so important. I had a slide last week that dropped out the bottom of Dropbox that had past, present, past, future, and then the slide said the present. And that's when we make those decisions. It's right in every moment. The next moment, the next moment, the next moment. What would love do now?
We have three readings today. The first reading is from Seth Godin. He's considered one of the leading authorities on leadership and change. He's the author of several books and brings his wisdom as an entrepreneur to both those just beginning their quest for meaningful work and those who have learned that it isn't found, it is created. The job is what you do when you are told what to do. The job is showing up at the factory, following instructions, meeting spec, and being managed. Someone can always do your job a little better or faster or cheaper than you can. The job might be difficult, it might require skill, but it's a job. Your art is what you do when no one can tell you exactly how to do it. Your art is the act of taking personal responsibility, challenging the status quo, and changing people. I call the process of doing your art the work. It's possible to have a job and do the work, too. In fact, that's how you become a linchpin. The job is not the work. Offered as wisdom for the journey. The second reading is by Kenneth Blanchard, who is one of the top-selling authors of all time. His book, The 1 Minute Manager, and the rest of his over 60 published works have sold over 21 million copies worldwide. There is a difference between interest and commitment. When you're interested in doing something, you do it only when it's convenient. When you're committed to doing something, you accept no excuses, only results. The third reading comes from Isaiah. Ah, here you are, the one who delights in love. Love is visible within you. And through it, we can bring forth justice to the nations. You do not cry nor raise your voice. You do not force your opinions on others. Those whose lives are like bruised reeds, them you do not break. And those whose hope is a dimly burning wick, that hope you do not shut down. You faithfully, carefully, steadily bring forth justice. Though you may grow faint from the effort, you will not be crushed until justice is established in the earth, from coast to coast to coast. The world awaits your teaching, your perspective, your insight and creativity. This is the universal hunger for truth, for justice and for love. It gives breath to all people and courage to some. Let love call you to righteousness. Let love take you by the hand and keep you. You are a covenant to the people, a light to the nations, to open the eyes that are blind to truth, to bring out the prisoners from the dungeons of their fear, those who sit in the darkness of despair. Love is the name we must speak, a glory experienced in no other way, a truth beyond idolatry. The ways we have practiced, the hopes we once held to, these things have come to pass, but new things must be declared. Before we even know them, they spring forth from the richness of love. Offered as wisdom for the journey.
Focused Moments from Greta Vosper.
So one of the things that has been a challenge many, many years ago, a number of people left West Hill and went to another congregation, and one of the people who left was the person who would let me know if my hair was standing up straight, right? So if any of you just caught Scott trying to, you know, adjust his hair, he's trying to take that role on, so I appreciate that. He doesn't have much to work with, though, when it comes to it's. Anyway. So, this is the first time that you have been the recipients of repeated texts. In the church, in churches that use the lectionary, the same readings come up every 3 years and are read over and again, and the same themes may be looked at as in an attempt to get through all the major themes of the Bible. I think I've spoken before about how the lectionary had to be revised not that long after it came into being because they'd forgotten that women were a theme in the Bible. So they added some women's things. But anyway, 3 years ago, I started this resource project trying to come up with some resources that could be used by clergy who wanted to use non-theistic things with the scripture passages. And it just so happens that this is the first Sunday that I said, heck, I'm going to go back to what I had 3 years ago and see what I can make of it. So you'll be relieved to know that I can never remember what I said in a perspective the next week, let alone 3 years later. But the focus moment is a rerun from 3 years ago and is connected to the theme of this Sunday in the lectionary, which is the baptism of Jesus. So that's why the commitment theme comes in, and actually the theme that I use is, I think, called the never-ending moment of commitment. So the focus moment is less related to what I'm going to say in a moment than it is to that three-year cycle that I have now begun. Believe me, you won't be getting the same things every week, but it was nice to be able to have them accessible this week. And so the focus moment. I was a child when the commitment was made, tethering me to an ancient worldview, crafted to make sense of the life into which I had been born. I was only a baby, in fact. Too young to know the difference between this way or that, let alone right or wrong. Too little to understand the concept of belief or any kind of commitment. Totally unaware of the space between myself and the world around me. I was pledged to an idea of love, wrapped up in a long-told tale. But now I know that worldviews are vulnerable to ideas. They can be torched in an instant or sent spiraling out of control, their wreckage an ideological shrapnel that can wound as well as heal. Now I know that making sense of life is a series of commitments to things that will forever change, their contexts and realities of fluid emergence that must coalesce anew in every moment. Now I know that there is space between you and I, and that it can be filled with anything we choose to place there or not, becoming the never-ending commitment or the void of unknowing, tethering us beyond time-worn ideologies to one another or leaving us alone.
One of the things that I've been the most proud of and the most impressed with is the way that no matter what has been happening about this family here, they continue to walk, and Randy continues to hold up the values we cherish here for their own sake, not for anything other than we have chosen these things as right and worthy. So as Randy...
He's going to take care of my soup.
That's good, which is quite in keeping with, but as he, well, maybe it's better he's not here, but as he's always held up to us to walk this walk regardless, not for reward and not for fear of punishment from something beyond us, but because we've chosen these things as worthy of our time and energy and commitment no matter what. And that's what this song is about.
May all that is worthy within me move me to grow beyond where I have grown. May all that is worthy around me inspire me to go beyond where I have gone. Strengthened in my spirit, moving past my doubts, embracing opportunities for reaching out, making the difference I can make for
that was beautiful. Thank you. So, I want to tell you a story that happened when this was still my office. I would meet with people there, sometimes people who were fairly new to the congregation. We'd get together for one of those conversations just to get to know each other. When this gentleman met with me the first time, you know, it was kind of like, okay, so what do you do? And he said he was a truck driver. And I went, oh, I've always wanted to be a truck driver. And he looked at me like I was kind of crazy. But the truth of the matter is that I hadn't always wanted to be a truck driver. Many of you know that I wanted to be a nuclear physicist. That was my first choice. When I got to university in the science program at Mount Allison, the fact that I had taken my grade 13 science courses in grade 12 but hadn't taken my grade 13 math courses in grade 12 meant I was kind of messed up when it came to the physics. So I flunked out of my first year physics course and went into the arts, right? Because that's what you do when you flunk out of science, you go into arts. And that sort of, that was the end of my nuclear physicist's career. Scott and I in Chautauqua one year were privileged to listen to Rod Page, who's one of the former secretaries of education in the United States. And he was talking about this difference between arts and science and how so many people in North America end up in arts programs rather than in science programs, whereas kids in Asia end up primarily in science programs. And he argued that it wasn't that we don't have the aptitude. It was that they weren't being taught properly. He said science, you know, if you taught hockey the way we teach science, in that you don't get to go on the ice until you're in a graduate or postgraduate program, right? Our hockey would suck, but we have great hockey because it's hands-on right from the age of four. Science and math, not quite so much, right? So he says the way you can tell that we don't bother to train properly in science and math is you look at the budgets for major universities in the United States, and they'll budget for, say, 2,000 first-year students in science, and they'll budget for 600 for second-year students in science. And, you know, like, what is the message there? What's that saying about the staying power? What does that say about their programs? Well, what it says is that Greta is not going to be a nuclear physicist, because she flunked out and ended up somewhere else. So when I flunked out and went into liberal arts, of course, I did a liberal arts education, and I graduated from that, and then worked in retail and worked in government in the Northwest Territories for a while, worked for the CBC in administration for a while, and then ended up back at Queen's taking my Master of Divinity to become a minister. That was a phenomenal experience. Now, I know some of you were distracted by the fact that I talked about masturbation last week, but I'm hoping you can stick with me through the whole thing I'm going to say now. Studying for an MDiv was orgasmic. It was like my brain was just like firing everywhere. It was this whole immersion in academic exploration that had taken place for 2,000 years. It was learning not just what the roots of all of that were, which of course I didn't know at the time, but learning all of that and then seeing how it had been built upon over the course of centuries. It was fascinating, and I was totally captivated. At the same time, I was learning about what we now call the worship arts, or the art of worship, which was introducing me to style and different ways to bring a sensual experience into worship space. I mean, I grew up in what was a Methodist church before it came into union. It was pretty staid, like you were focusing on the word and the Bible passage was being taken apart and explicated so that you could understand it. But this was like smells and colors and light and engagement and dance. Like, it was so, that word again, you know, like that's where I go, because it was amazing and I loved every little bit of it. So I got to do the practice of ministry and enjoyed that and learned a lot. Like, it was a 3-year program with 1 year of an internship. And then I was ordained in Pembroke. There was an earthquake that day. There was, in Pembroke, an earthquake. Anyway, enough said about that. But I almost didn't get ordained. When I got to the interviews that I was supposed to be ordained from, they were concerned that I was a little bit too much of a feminist. In fact, a significant part of our systematic theology had been about feminist theology. That was a big thing back then. Those of you who have been around the church for a long period of time know that the late 80s, early 90s was very highly, a lot of attention was going to feminist theology at that time, and liberation theology. Liberation theology coming out of Latin America was huge. Lots of the most provocative writers were writing from within the Catholic Church and giving us new ways to see things. So I think that they had this idea that Che Feminista was a little bit too much for them. This sort of feminist Che Guevara was like, uh-oh, something's going to happen here. So actually, I didn't get ordained. They delayed it for a year, actually. And then the next year, they had to make another motion that said that I would be ordained, and they had to change it from Peterborough to Pembroke. That's all they had to do. The motion failed. So I had to go for a whole new set of interviews. And anyway, we got through. I ended up ordained. And so I'm working in a congregation in downtown Toronto. And that's when I decided I wanted to be a truck driver. Yeah, because ministry is not a job like Seth Godin talks about. It's not a job where you go into a place with a certain set of skills and you use that certain set of skills and someone tells you what you're supposed to do. Your job description lays it out in terms that are do this then, and if you don't do this, we'll have to talk, right? It's not about a job. It's not about knowing what's coming next. It's all over the place, ministry, and it seeps into your life because there's no 9-to-5 either. And so when my friend, who I don't see very often, but we're still friends, when he looked at me and said, "You want to be a truck driver?" I said, yeah, like I'd have time to just read. Right? So he reaches in his pocket, he pulls out Huckleberry Finn. I'm looking, like, what is a truck driver doing reading Huckleberry Finn? Well, he says, my liberal arts education was wanting, so I'm reading myself through the library, and I'm, yes, oh, that would be so nice. Like, just having the time to read yourself through the library. I mean, wouldn't that be amazing? Now, the truth of the matter is, and I don't want you to get me wrong, I love what I do. And I love the fact that of so many professions, I get to read in my field, and it's a broad field now. You know, it used to be focused on that one thick book with the skinny, thin pages. Well, I can read in anything now, and I do. And I love the engagement of being with you, talking about really interesting things, stretching our relationship because of the things that we talk about, coming to understand each other differently and having you know, that dignity of one and the other growing as we have that conversation. So while I would like to be a truck driver, or periodically I've sort of daydreamed about working in a coffee shop too. That's another thing because, you know, it's so easy, right? It seems so easy except for that stuff going on about the $14 wage. But ministry, as I've said, is not showing up at the factory. So what is it about that I like about the truck? It's not just reading, because I get to read all the time. And so I was thinking about it, and I had this friend in high school, and this is the best example I can come up with. I had this friend in high school who was like, she was actually crazy. I'm fairly convinced she was crazy. In that she couldn't hear anything that anyone said to her. She just was on her own train, right? And if you spent any time with her, there was no way you were going to get to do anything that you wanted to do. So when my life got a little icky or out of control, or it was overwhelming because of something that was going on, I would go and spend time with her. Because I didn't have to think about anything, right? She would just take care of my life. right? She'd tell me what we were going to do. We'd do it. She'd tell me what the next thing was going to be. And so I didn't have to think about what was going on in my life at all. And that's the thing about truck driving and coffee shopping. It's that I didn't have to think about it. I didn't have to have the responsibility. I could just show up and it would all happen, right? And sometimes it was pretty crazy what happened with that woman. But anyway, so that's what that's about. It's about falling into the work a little too much and wanting to just have the job. But here we are in the work, in what Seth Godin talks about as the work. It's not the job. It's not being told what to do. It's not punching a time clock. It's not having time that you're doing the job and time that you're, you know, having fun. It's about your life. It's about the commitment that we make to this life. And you'll notice that I'm using the word we. I'm not using the word here I am in the work. I'm talking about us. We are engaged in that work. And so here are the things. It's about no one can tell us exactly how to do what it is that we're doing, right? We're making it up as we go along, which sounds, you know, a little flip. But in truth, that's what we've done. We've taken a step and we've figured out what the world looks like every time we take a step. And sometimes we've taken a step and we've hemorrhaged, because that's what the bleeding edge is all about. It's about not knowing what that next step is going to bring. So we take that next step because we're confident that that needs to be taken. And there's bloodletting and loss, right? And we've done that. We know that. We're familiar with that reality. I'm pretty sure you've got that happening in your life from time to time, where you take a step in a relationship, or you take a step at the job, or you take a step in something, some area of your life that you didn't expect you were going to be in, and then there's bloodletting. Like, we do that, and we do it here. We do it with what we're doing in this place. It's also about taking that responsibility that, you know, if bloodletting happened, if we started hemorrhaging because of a choice that we made, yeah, we made the choice. It's not about somebody over there having, you know, some critical attitude about what we're doing and, you know, getting all upset about it. It's that we made the choice to do that. And if their reaction is that, we maybe didn't intend for that reaction, but their reaction is because of what we did. This is the argument that Scott and I get in all the time. His reaction is because what have I did. My reaction is because what he did. I'm sure some of you know, are intimately familiar with that kind of an argument. No hand showing. So we take responsibility for what it is that we do and how we do it and why we do it. And we challenge the status quo. And this is, I think, one of the most important things that we do. That's what you do in the work, as Godin says. It's you challenge the status quo. How many people in this room are comfortable with the status quo? Not many of us would say, in whatever our situation is or whatever the world is, all we have to do is look outside our door and there's status quo stuff all over the place that drives us crazy. Because we don't want that to be happening in our world. We don't want to be complicit in that kind of pain. We don't want to leave for our world all kinds of Cape Towns all over the place that have no water. We don't want to do that. So we challenge the status quo. The song that Scott had, the What Would Love Do Now song, is about looking at the world and saying, okay, whoa, so what would be the response to that would be appropriate? That's not about the job. That's about the work. That's about the art of living and being part of what goes on in the world, being a significant and important part of that and taking responsibility for it. And then because you don't shut your mouth, you don't close your eyes, you don't just hunker down inside and Netflix for the entire week, we change people. And the risk of changing people, even ourselves, is perhaps the greatest risk. But once we start doing that, it doesn't stop. We start changing people's minds. We change their attitudes. Sometimes we change their attitudes so significantly that they can't stand us for it. That's what the work is about. It's about those kinds of risks. And we are in that work together. I wanted to go back to the reading that Marcia shared with you that came from Isaiah. And those of you who know the passage in Isaiah will know that it's not exactly the way most people will have ever read that passage, because it has been altered. But I'm going to read it again to you, because this is where we are. And that we can go to our tradition and find this inspiration beyond the words, the particular words that prescribe it to a single belief tradition, or a dual or triple, if you want to talk about Abrahamic traditions. The language that circumscribes it to that is not good enough language, because of the passages that are in that text, there can be incredible inspiration. So I'm going to read this for you again, and I want you to think about it as the work that we do, as that art that is ours, that life that we can create. Here you are, the ones who delight in love. It's visible within you, and through it we can bring forth justice to the nations. You don't cry or raise your voice. You don't force your opinions on others. Those whose lives are like a bruised reed, them you do not break. And those whose hope is a dimly burning wick, that hope you do not shut down. You faithfully, carefully, steadily bring forth justice. And though you may grow faint from the effort, you will not be crushed until justice is established in the earth. We talk about that in our Dream Away services. We talk about that because that's not absolutely true. Sometimes we are crushed. Sometimes our lives end and we haven't brought about the beauty that we sought to bring about in the world. Sometimes the dreams that we've dreamt die because we no longer have the strength or the courage or the energy to pursue them anymore. But the dreams don't die. If they're worthy dreams, someone picks them up after us, and we do this every year. We pick them up, and we say, what is it we need to do now so that we can pick up some dream that someone had centuries ago and make it real in this world, hold up everybody's dignity, stand in the face of injustice and say, not with me here. You're going to have to go through me if you want to get to that. We do this over and again. This is the universal hunger for truth, for justice, and for love. It gives breath to all people and courage to some. Some. Not everyone. Not everyone has the courage to do what you can do. Not everyone has the will to do what you can do. But each of you individually has the courage to do what you can do. And you then are some of the sum. One of the sum. Let love call you in righteousness. Let love take you by the hand and keep you. You are a covenant to the people, a light to the nations, to open the eyes that are blind to truth, to bring out the prisoners from the dungeons of their fear, those who sit in the darkness of despair. Love is the name we must speak, a glory experienced in no other way, a truth beyond idolatry. This is our art. This is our work. This is what we do. Scott gave me this beautiful book for Christmas. It's 365 Days of Inspiration. It has beautiful quotes on these incredible photographs. And the one for today, which I only noticed this morning, of course, was this dark, brooding storm over the ocean, and the ocean and the sky were varying shades of not gray, but dark gray, very dark, roiling gray, you might describe it as. That was the photo. And the quote was from Vivian Green, and many of you will be familiar with this quote. Life isn't about waiting for the storm to be over. It's about learning how to dance in the rain. And you know, when I read these quotes, sometimes I'm not really sure what the person meant. But perhaps I was thinking that it's about saying that life is not easy. This thing we call life is not easy. And we know that it's not easy. But maybe what we have to do in the face of that dis-ease is find our people. We find our people so that amongst those people we can do the work that is ours to do. We can be strengthened. We can be encouraged. We can be held accountable. We can be inspired. We can be ignited. Amongst our people, we can do that. And then we can find the places where we can change people, where we can be the art of creating something new in the world. I think that's who we are. You're my people. You are the people amongst whom I can bring about the change that I want to bring about. You are the people amongst whom I can let go of the dreams of the tyranny of the truck driver, the endless road that never really makes it to someplace new. We are on the journey to someplace new, changing the world, changing individuals within it, changing our own hearts on the way. And you encourage me, and I am grateful. Thank you. Each week we go from this place with that screen up there that says watching each other away. And the idea is that we have each other's back when we go from this place because we are our people. Because we want to hold one another, both to those values that challenge us and stretch us and call us to be more than we really thought we might, that challenge us to go outside of our comfort zones to bring about the work that is ours and make it real in this world. And to know that we go with our people around us as a host of witnesses to what it is that we do. So I invite you to go from this place out to your work, whether it takes place where your job is or whether it takes place where you play or whether it takes place amongst your family or someplace where you're going to be called to have a conversation this week. Go and be about the work that is you, the art of creating it that is you, the privilege of being in that place at that time that is you. Go and be the fullness of you in every moment between now and when we see one another again. And may you shine. Go in peace.
Oh, would justice make? What path would kindness take? What would a little more wisdom see? What would the day. These are all our questions. What would love do now? What...
You have been listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to www.westhill.net/donate.